of its participants and are not necessarily those of WWPR Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Saw your post this morning, 72% and climbing for Republican takeover.
Yeah, we saw some new polls this morning in states like Georgia, Kentucky, to have further good news for the GOP. Look, it's still a close election. You have six or seven or eight races that could go either way. But like that poll in Iowa last night, which, as you mentioned, is one of the most reliable polls in the country, all these races are being held in purple or red states, too, so the bar isn't that high. So the polls are clearer now that the GOP will probably win the Senate. We give him about a 73-74% chance right now.
Argument not be made that Republicans should be doing a lot better, and why aren't they?
Well, we don't know how well they're doing yet. I mean, the return, we won't know that until Tuesday night. They may be doing very well. The polls would indicate that they are. All I'm saying is, you can't count your chickens till they hatch, and until you know what the turnout's going to be, you really don't know. We really did get beat on the ground in 2012. The Democrats had a far better turnout program than we did, mostly based on social media. So I don't think that you can take anything for granted, and I have to tell you, it was my experience in the five presidential campaigns that I led or participated in, the worst thing in the world you can do is assume that you're going to win and not have your ducks in the
row. Now, the good news is we've made a lot of progress since the worst economic crisis of our lifetimes. You know, so when I first came into office, the economy was in a free fall, the auto industry was in a free fall, banks were frozen up, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. Over the past 55 months, our businesses have now added 10.3 million new jobs. For the first time in more than 6 years, the unemployment rate's below 6%. Over the past 6 months, our economy has grown at its fastest pace in more than 10 years.
Good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM, heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'm Henry Ains. Here's Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Good morning, Henry. And the Wang Wang Blues are possibly around the corner. You know who Wang is, don't you? He's Sam Wang. And he and Nate Silver are the two of the better prognosticators. We just heard Silver speak about the New York Times percentage in the Des Moines Register and what they had to say. But old Sam says it's going to be a 50-50 Senate with Joe Biden breaking the tie. Now, Sam was 100% in 2012, whereas Nate Silver was off by a few. And that's kind of a difference, I would say.
Well, you heard President Obama there touting what the current state of affairs is. And I was, as now has become my habit, at the 12 midnight rerun, I go back and forth between Rachel Maddow and Megyn Kelly and try and figure out which world I'm living in. And I heard somebody
pull
on
your nylons, Henry.
Yeah, well, I heard Megyn Kelly guest say, "Well, the unemployment's incredible in the United States. The economy's in a tank. The deficit's in terrible shape." I'm like, wait a minute. Why isn't somebody saying, no, that's not what the numbers are at all? But it really doesn't matter what the reality is.
Well, you're dealing with forever oxymoronic xenophobia. Fox. They make things up at your pleasure, especially if you're a conservative.
Well, and then Rachel Maddow's talking about issues I don't really care about and probably don't have that much bear.
That's because you haven't waited
for
work.
Yes, I'm insensitive. And
you're just, yes, and she doesn't wear nylons, and she doesn't wear a bra. So what do you want? I mean, you know,
well, I would like some kind of discussion about something I care about. I mean, there's only so many times you can go to Ferguson, Missouri, and think that motivates voters around the country. It's an issue that is important and that you got to deal with, but it's not a motivating factor in an election. It might be a motivating factor in a Ferguson election.
Well, I think the lack of control of police departments is effective in the same manner in Ferguson as it is all over the country. It's not just there.
Right. And but the motivating what does the Senate race have to do with
well,
something
the motivating
like that?
Issue that is what Obama failed to do, which was he should have gone and pushed for the immigration bill. Had he done that, Colorado would be in the Democratic camp right now, with no question. Although it's been said
that he would have lost North Carolina.
That's the rub.
Ms. Hagan,
exactly.
Ms. Hagan.
But although it's been said that at least 8 of the points that are speculated on about in Colorado are really not to be believed.
Well, the most important thing is gas is below $3, and that makes people feel good, and we've been told over and over again.
You feel good because you have gas, or that you can buy gas?
Both. And if I get rid of gas, I feel even better.
Well, that's right. That's called
whether I burn it or shoot it out the exhaust pipe, whatever it is, I feel better about
it.
But we've told over and over again by all the talking heads that people don't feel good about ISIS, they don't feel good about Ebola. Now they're feeling good about their gas.
And they pass their gas.
Yeah. So I'm predicting better turnouts and better responses.
Well, the prospect of the Republican Senate is in the New York Times here. In a rare fit of realism on Tuesday, Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, that was last Tuesday, admitted he would be unable to repeal the Affordable Care Act if Republicans win the Senate next week and he becomes majority leader. That would take 60 votes, he said, and no one thinks Republicans can muster 60 votes. So the whole ball game is riding on a very close Senate with, you know, with caucusing on the part of the independents coming in with the Democrats more than likely, and all kinds of deals being cut. So Obama may be under trouble, but he can veto anything they put forward, even if it's something he wants. So it's going to be an interesting time, not a fun time for Democrats, but it's their problem if they don't turn out. And they could turn out and turn this election in a heartbeat. In any event, the issues in Sarasota are the same as they are in Manatee, are the same as they are in the state. Constitutional amendments, Rick Scott opposes Amendment 1. Charlie Crist supports it. That's the amendment that would maintain the one-third of the state's tax on real estate transactions to set aside for the environment. Rick Scott supports Amendment 3. Amendment 3 would give the sitting government the ability to appoint a Supreme Court, an appellate court justices if there were terms that expire at the time he is the governor. Do we have a caller?
We do have a caller, and she'll just give us a couple seconds here because we need to set the table. As we want to thank Dennis Maley of the Bradenton Times and all the people at thebradentontimes.com. They put us out again on their newsletter today about the series of interviews that we've done with local candidates and out there for people to listen, both school board and county commission, to get a sense, an extended sense of the candidates. We've, of course, had both Mary Cantrell and Julia Ranabar for the school board, multiple interviews with Terry Wunder, county commission candidate, and a interview with Carol Whitmore, the incumbent that Terry Wunder is running against. Carol Whitmore is and was scheduled for today. She is at a campaign event at the Dolphin Aviation right now.
Putnam, Brand.
She's going to call in whenever she gets a break. I guess we have a caller on the line that wants to raise an issue in her stead, not for her, but in her stead, because we don't know when she's going to call in, so she's going to raise the issue now. But we're also joined in the studio by Terry Wunder, and let's check Terry's mic and see how she's doing. How are you today, Terry?
I'm very well, thank you.
Except your mic isn't. Let's try it a little bit higher
point right towards your mouth.
All right, there like this?
See, yeah, that is working. Just like your Jay-Z talking to Beyonce there. Just get it right up there.
Shoot it right in there.
All right. So this is an unexpected treat, and I do have to do a disclaimer Terry, I feel it's unfair to have this many interviews with one candidate, but you're here, and opportunely you have a chance to talk to a constituent, so we want to take advantage of that. We have Gail on the line. Gail, what is the issue that you wanted to talk about?
Hi, I had just moved here from New York, and I'm living with my sister in an apartment. I've been doing a lot of research with the animal welfare in the area, and I would like to know if, you know, whether it's, you know, Terry or Carol, if they're going to really push for legislation to stop all of these puppy mills in the area.
Oh, the puppy mills.
Yes, there's a big puppy mill.
Yeah, there's some laws on the sale of puppies under state law, I believe, actually. So the puppy mills, what is it you know about puppy mills?
Well, on 53rd Street at Petland, they had a chihuahua for $1,600, and they were willing to finance it and everything.
I'm on here right now on the radio.
That's nothing but a puppy mill. When we have,
when you're calling something a puppy mill, doesn't the sale of animals, dogs in particular, have to be licensed? What is the story on that, Terry?
Well, there is a movement here in the Manatee and Sarasota area to end puppy milling. And I've been endorsed by the League of Humane Voters, which is an organization that is dedicated to changing legislation
to end
puppy milling, which is what you have with puppy mills are people who breed animals in captivity and don't keep them in very humane conditions. Yes,
no oversight.
And then these animals end up in you know, stores around the county. And it's actually competition for no-kill, by the way.
A competition for no-kill?
Because if people are buying animals from puppy milling, we still have this, you know, massive unwanted pet population in the county over, you know, with animals that are impounded at the shelter that need homes, animals that are being cared for by rescue groups and fostering people who foster animals in the county, and so there's a competition there. So it's like why buy from a store that is contributing to inhumane puppy milling when you could buy, you know, a rescue dog, when you could adopt a rescue dog.
So they're in competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a competition.
There's no regulation of this, is what you're saying.
Well, with puppy milling, superficially with the stores, you have some kind of regulation with the stores. But it's known to many people in the animal welfare movement that puppy milling
is that something that can be legislated locally, or is that has to be at the state level?
It's state level, and it's worthwhile for anyone who's working locally. In local government administration, to want to use the lobbying arm of your government to help change laws, to use your referential power to change laws.
Yes, I do. I feel that way. I want to start locally because Petland is known to sell puppy mill dogs. And I have another issue. I mean, I've been looking into this extensively, and it means a lot to me, and it's really going to decide who I vote for tomorrow is the county vet, Dr. Berglund from Beach Veterinarian Services. I find that there's a conflict of interest when he's working with Petland with all these puppy mill dogs, but yet he's the vet for our, our county shelter.
How would that conflict manifest itself?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Well, he's a veterinarian. He's supposed to be doing things humanely. They use the heart stick. And everything else, there's been abuse.
What is that? The heart stick.
I don't even want to go into it.
Well, you need to explain that to the audience. You put it out there, so you need to say what that does.
It kills the animals.
So it's a killing device.
The county animal shelter kills these animals when they shouldn't be killed.
So he euthanizes animals.
Pardon me?
Your problem is his euthanasia of animals.
Right.
Yes, when they're
okay.
They're
who would take care of the puppies at Petland then?
Pardon me?
Who would you have take care of the puppies in Petland until you get them put out of business?
Well, I'm sure there's got to be fosters or county programs or state programs.
But you don't know what that might be. What's the likelihood of any particular agency to step in there and take care of these animals?
Right, but I want a commissioner who's going to be able to jump on the Animal Advocacy Board and say, no, that there are problems at Manatee County Animal.
So you don't
have... this has been the problem in Manatee County for the past few years regarding this movement for animal welfare in the county, which is that the leadership has... The common complaint, and I believe it to be true, is that the leadership has not been effective.
What should they do?
In implementing policies that are no-kill policies for...
policy's set forward, then what?
Yes. Well, there's policy, and then there's enforcement of it, and ensuring that our county government and administration...
Before we run beyond Gail's phone call, which we can right now, but let's wrap up with Gail. Gail, is it just that you don't want the vet that deals with animal services dealing with Petland? It's not that you would deny the animals at Petland a vet, would you?
Oh, not at all, but I think there's a conflict of interest.
Okay.
Well, and what I would say to Gail is you know, go down Cortez Road and drive by. If you have a grievance about the vet, about this vet, Go by Cortez Road and see whose campaign sign is in the front yard of his practice in Cortez. It
I've
isn't mine.
Seen that. I've seen that, and I think there's a conflict.
Well, whose sign is
Gail?
It's my opponent's sign.
It's your opponent's sign. Okay.
Yeah.
Gail,
well,
thank you for the call.
Of interest for Dr. Berglund from Beach Veterinarian Services to be on the Animal Advisory Board.
Okay. Well, we got the point. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
Thank you.
941-745-1490, 941-745-1490. Last chance to get on the air before the election. Terry Wunder in the studio, and I guess
Ms.
we'll
Globe.
Put your comments.
Mrs. Globe?
Well, let's see if we have a mic that works here first.
Yeah, speaking to the mic now.
Let's just give us a test here.
Okay, it's GLOW,
GLOW. Oh, no, please.
GLOW.
GLOW. Yes.
Is that your first name
Facebook?
Or your last name?
At least for today. Anyway, I guess you'll have to share a mic with Terry there. Let's
try it again.
There
yes,
you go.
Sound
we
wonderful.
Hear you fine now.
Okay.
No pun intended.
Okay. My name is Deborah Glow, and I've been working with the no-kill movement here in Manatee County since I moved here 4 years ago.
And what does that mean? What is the no-kill? It sounds like you can't kill anything, or you can kill something.
No, that's not true.
Oh, okay.
It's Nathan Winograd.
Okay, you got that point.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. It's based on Nathan Winograd's no-kill policy, or policies and procedures. It's how you implement.
Speak into the mic.
And how you implement the 11 steps, the 11 steps at the shelter. And apparently, I'll start at the beginning. Ms. Whitmore, who is Dr. Wunder's opponent, assigned in 2011 a no-kill resolution. She brought it before the board, the BOCC, and to make Manatee County no-kill, and she's been writing on this since 2011, and it's never been implemented since 2011. And they're saying, and they've been faking us out and trying to tell us that the county is no-kill because the save rate has been going up. But they're still killing adoptable animals.
Okay. Let's slow down just a minute here. And let me make this a little bit easier for you. I think if somehow you can move your chair a little bit closer,
closer to one
another. You won't be quite leaving the studio with a bad pain in your neck there. At least not.
So you're saying that there's a no-kill policy, but many dogs which are adoptable are being left out of the mix and put to death.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So
and the public is being misled and has been.
In what
misled.
Way?
Well, there's sticker. Well,
what are the numbers? Because I saw numbers when I was researching this, and the change in the status of the dogs, youth and pets euthanized, was pretty impressive as far as what they had been.
Okay, they're pretty impressive, but.
Well, what is it? What are those numbers?
Those numbers. Well, the numbers are misleading due to the fact that in 2013. There were 300 animals that were not accounted for that were killed, I call it murdered, in our county by...
Is this a pro-life dog policy? Is that
pardon
what
this,
me? Is this a pro-life dog policy?
I would kind of say yes, a pro-life dog policy. But let's back up a little
not
bit.
Not if you were my dog and they say, you neutered that dog yet?
all dogs should be neutered and spayed. Woof, woof. I'm sorry. That's contributing to the problem in this county.
What, too many wild dogs?
We've got a lot of strays, yes.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things I might like to bring up in 2013, through public record requests, we figured out there were 300 animals that were unaccounted for in the and that were actually euthanized or murdered by...
Do they have a euthanized list?
I have it right in front of me.
Well, let's back it up just a little bit more. How many stray animals or loose animals get picked up a month?
It's hard to tell.
In a year.
In a year? I don't have those figures.
Oh, how about what kind of percentage what percentage get euthanized of what get picked up?
I am not a, how can I say that? I'm not a...
A numbers person?
Numbers person. Oh, okay. Like, I'm a numbers person if you want me to do your books for you, but not with this, but I do have basic facts that I got off the public record.
You have no idea what the numbers are.
But they're awfully large.
Like 1,000, 2,000?
Maybe 1,000. Probably 1,000 animals are... I'm going to say this. I'm going to go off the cuff, but I'm going to say this. Probably about 1,000 animals a year are euthanized.
So and about
adoptable animals.
80 to 100 a month.
Pardon me?
80 to 100 a month.
Yes.
And what kind of corroboration do you have? How do you back that up?
By the public records request.
I think that's pretty accurate, is it?
Yeah. Through our public records request.
But I also think the number picked up is pretty huge. Let's go to the phone lines. Bear with us, Debbie.
Got a caller here. Okay.
You're live on the air.
Good morning.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to speak to Mrs. Wonder.
Oh, Mrs. Okay. Wonder.
What's your name, please?
What is your name?
My name is Joan. I called last week, if you remember right.
Okay, Joan, go ahead,
but I noticed
please.
There's some questions being asked that I can answer, probably.
Okay.
Like what?
Because I've done some of the shelter statistics.
Great.
I just wanted to bring out, you asked about how many animals are euthanized.
Yes.
And how many they take in.
Yes.
You can figure a month they take in approximately 400 animals.
And how many are euthanized?
Right now, the county is claiming they have a 90% save rate. That, in fact, is not true.
What is the
save rate? It's around 80%.
So that's a 20%. It's a 10% factor off, right?
Yes, about 8 to 10%. We have proven that through public record requests.
So that means instead of 320 dogs that are saved, you have 340 dogs or whatever.
If you'll excuse me, because I've had to get my dog from the
animal. You really personally know.
Yeah,
him.
So I and my dog was found because of the way they put it up on the website, etc.
Because you were not.
So we were able to actually pick it up within about an hour or two after it got picked up off the street. So we're at a 20. Let's go with your number. 20% euthanasia. Of the 80% that get saved, do you know what percent get returned to their owner?
They either say return to the owner in the field or they come and pick them up. And that rate, just so you know, for the county, for animal services, is approximately 12% a month.
I'm sorry, I was answering
12%.
The phone. What was the number?
12%
of the overall impound number.
And 12% go back to the owners?
Yes, go back to the owners. So that's, just so you know, that is a very, very low rate.
Okay.
Nationally, you'd like to see that closer up into the 20 to 25% return to owner.
So at 12, so at those numbers, Henry, that you're down to 320, 340, you're down to right around 300.
Well, let's stick with the first way we're looking at this. 20% get euthanized, and you're saying 12% get returned to owner?
Right, but that's
that
already is included in their save rate. When we're talking about, when you're talking about a save rate, what it defines is your total number of animals that you've impounded, okay? And you look at how many you euthanized, whether it's done at the vet, whether it's done in your shelter, whether they die in their cage, whether an owner brings you a dog.
All of
and
those
says,
things, yep. What is the number?
Where does the 60 or 70% that you haven't defined yet go?
Yeah,
are they adopted? What happens to them?
Well, they're adopted, or they go to rescue. It could be they go into a rescue.
And that means what? Does anyone know what that means?
Well, rescue basically would mean that they go to one of the approved rescues, that somebody takes them, they go into foster, and they're prepared for adoption.
A station owner does a lot of foster work with animals.
Oh, she does. Oh,
yes. Okay. And many other people associated with the station. And okay, well, what I saw doesn't dispute the euthanasia part with her. I saw numbers, and they could have been just snapshot on recent months, that the return to owner was closer to around 40%, and the other 40% were... but, you know, we're still in the same point of, is it 10% euthanasia or 20% euthanasia?
20%, yep.
Okay. So, well,
so that's 80 dogs out of 400.
Your numbers. And so, but what is the point you're trying to make about that, other than it needs to improve?
Well, I think the issue is the county, though they have some shelters that are, or rescues that are no-kill, Animal Services has never achieved no-kill. They were claiming they were at 90%.
Who has?
But they are, in fact, not.
Who did that?
They didn't achieve no-kill.
The county administrator and the new director.
Where have they killed the level of minimal euthanasia that you
achieved
want?
It? Where has that been achieved?
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
Where has the no-kill policy been achieved that you're advocating?
The no-kill policy, I'll give you one great example. Upstate New York, Tompkins County, they have achieved no-kill, and it was a matter of bringing in a director that the day that he walked in, killing wasn't the option anymore.
They have 0%?
Now, once again, not mean that dogs that are truly suffering or cats that have terminal illnesses.
Okay. But you're not answering the question.
We do realize that
asked.
Some animals do need to be euthanized.
Okay, Joan, we have a caller that's been waiting now to come on the line, and we.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Joan.
Thank you. And caller, give us your first name, please.
Vanessa.
Hey, Vanessa. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question about what you've just been discussing. I've been following this in the news, and with respect to the euthanasia rate or kill rate, one of the disturbing things that I read was that pets were being sent out to Beach Vet to be killed for the county, and that the county was using this to, in fact, improve their save rate, because if they killed the animal off-site, then they thought they didn't have to count it in their records.
Keep going.
And so I wanted to know what Dr. Wonder would do to prevent this from happening.
I don't think is it Dr. Wonder?
Future?
Well, you can call me Terry.
Terry's she goes by Terry.
Oh, okay, Terry. I just wanted to know what you would do to put a stop to the deception that's been going on in the county. I think also someone alluded to the fact that the public's been misled, which is because they painted no kill on their vans and on the downtown center. So I, like many people until recently, thought Manatee County was a no kill county.
Hmm. So, Terry, what's your status? Where do you think this is? What's wrong with this problem?
Well, for many, many, many months now, I have been demanding accountability.
And that means?
In terms of making sure that the shelter has employees who are dedicated to no-kill. And
well, how are you going to make the definition of no-kill work from your perspective?
Well, it's not just about euthanasia rates. There are other aspects of the no-kill resolution that the county adopted that were never implemented or were
just... Give me one or two.
Cursorily. Redemption, and that is returning impounded pets to their owners, mm-hmm. having an effective redemption program, having an effective trap, neuter, and spay program. I mean, there are any number of...
So it's a lack of implementation of existing policy.
And treating volunteers with respect, and the shelter employees humanely treating the animals in their custody. This has been a huge source of contention here in Manatee County.
We need to call time. Vanessa, any last words before we have to go to a break?
Well, yes, I do. Dr. Terry Wonder just mentioned about making sure the animals were treated humanely. That was another thing I read about, that there was a man there that kicked an animal that was an employee, and that
the animal was an employee? I think you misstated that, but that's all right.
Pardon?
Did he kick the animal or did he kick the employee?
We've got seconds here. We need to wrap this up.
Well, the animal was named Happy Feet. It was in the paper that an employee was accused of kicking the dog, and he has now resigned. Okay. So I would like to see humane treatment of the animals.
Well, it sounds like post-election we need to do something about this topic, because we're trying to deal it ad hoc.
We've come back to this subject, yes.
And Vanessa, thank you for the call. We look forward to you participating in the discussion at post-election.
That's after
the
election.
Okay, thank you so much.
And we're going to go to a break, and we'll do a little on-break production meeting here. You're listening to The Morning Edge.
Sharpen your edge. Call The Morning Edge with your comments at 941-745-1490. That's 941-745-1490. You can find your Morning Edge any time of the day, on demand, at themorningedge.podomatic.com. Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too. Sharpen your edge. Call The Morning Edge with your comments at 941-745-1490. That's 941-745-1490. You can find your Morning Edge any time of the day, on demand, at themorningedge.podomatic.com.
It's The Morning Edge here at WWPR, 1490 AM.
Well, going to Carol Whitmore.
Well, originally Carol Whitmore was scheduled to be in the studio, and unfortunately campaign events have taken her away, but she has made time breaking away from those to speak with us now. And thank you for joining us this morning, Carol.
Good morning, Carol.
Thank you very much. Sorry, Adam Putman made an unexpected announcement that he was going to be at the Dolphin Aviation with Governor Bush just a few days ago, so Adam's a good partner with all our farming community and agriculture community, so the county commission had to show up in support of him.
Well, right here in the studio, we stumbled into a big pile of stuff, I would say.
Yeah,
we did not realize this
no-kill
policy had the passion that different people have brought to the show this
five
morning.
Calls already on that.
So give us your take on the no-kill policy, please.
Well, for most of the people that do know, actually, thanks to the Humane Society of Manatee County meeting with me in about 2009, they brought it to Manatee County's attention, and they said that we want to strive to make Manatee County no-kill. There was about a 54% save rate in our shelters. Hillsborough County, just an FYI, is about 44%. So I brought this to the director at the time, and I kept bringing it up at the commission level if they were interested in me pursuing this, and they said yes. So we got director at the time on board. We went and attended Nathan Winograd. They did. And we decided that we were going to try to make Manatee County a no-kill. When the commission voted on the policy, there were two county commissioners at the time, Don Hayes and Joe McClash, that were hesitant about doing this for budgetary reasons. And thanks to the passionate animal community, over 200 people showed up. I don't think my opponent was there. And showed up to say that we want Manatee County to strive towards this. So we set a resolution, and our mission is to try to reach 90% save rate.
Well, in your, excuse me.
So that's where we are today. We've only reached 88%, and there has been major ups and downs and bumps along the way. In fact, Hillsborough tried to do this, and they hired somebody that was a no-kill expert, and they had to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a rough road, but we last year our save rate was 88%, and it's better than.
So you're saying 12% either were euthanized or what?
What the no-kill policy means is you try to save 90% of adoptable animals, not all animals, adoptable animals. But thanks to the commitment and the passion of our very passionate animal community, they've stepped up and they've really helped us even get out animals in the past would not have been a second thought that we would have to euthanize them. And they've actually helped a lot to bring the rates to 88% save rate. We still, it's not good enough. I'm not a quitter. It's going to be 90% once we hopefully get the right people in place at Animal Services.
It was, on some of the callers, it was the idea was that the policies that are set forward look noble and promising and so forth, but are not really being followed. And there's a question about the treatment of the employees as well as the treating of animals in a humane way. So just the general condition of the treatment of animals and employees, where is the county in this whole thing?
Oh, well, I totally agree. I mean, I have received, concerns from the citizens throughout the years. And I think everybody must remember, and hopefully my opponent realizes, as a county commissioner, you set policy. You don't run the department. But when issues came before me as a county commission at that level, I passed down to appropriate people. I finally think that we're on the right track. The director or the chief was moved out of that position. I had my issues with him, but I don't publicize them in front of the cameras. That's not my style. And I think with Bill Hutchison in the role, he loves animals. He has like 8 or 9 adopted cats and a pit bull that he adopted.
Now, you mentioned the
so
public safety director. Are we talking Ron Coper? Carol? You were referring to Ron Coper leaving his job? That is.
No, I was talking about Chris Weisskopf, but Ron was the director after the original director retired. And Animal Services was taken away from Ron Coper and put directly in, Mr. Hunter put it in directly over him, and he brought back Bill Hutchison out of retirement to try to get things back on track, because Bill is the one that originally started this process of no-kill.
Okay. Does the leaving of Public Safety Director Ron Coper have any relationship to this?
Any effect?
I don't know why Ron resigned. And in fact, for the county commissioners were notified at 5 o'clock last Thursday, and some of the people I think that are attending your thing today actually had it on their Facebook page, a letter that I still have yet to see that came out that Mr. Coper resigned. So when I asked Mr. Hunziker why, he goes, I don't discuss personnel issues, Mr. Coper was in charge of public safety when he resigned, not Animal Services.
All right. Now, we all have a caller that's been standing by that just called in once she heard you on the air that wants to get a question. And we have other questions we need to go to here. This is going to be Barbara. That's all I nearly know at this point. Go ahead, Barbara.
Barbara Hines.
Hello, morning, Barbara. What's on your mind?
Hi. How are you? I just recently moved down from New Hampshire, and I was reading up on everything. And my curiosity was, why are donations that are being sent to Whitmore and the no-kill fund going to the same P.O. box? Shouldn't they be separate?
Yeah, that's been coming up, the issue of the P.O. box. Yeah. What's the story
on that? I explained it to you last night, and let me explain it for the record. First of all, Joe McClatch called the local newspaper. Joe McClatch is on my opponent's campaign committee along with his blog newspaper. I know that. I have it in documentation. I have it in writing. But what happened is I've had a P.O. box since I was 15-year-old, Sam. I was married, and I got divorced, and my ex-husband kept that P.O. box for years because I moved to Anna Maria for a while, and this is in Holmes Beach. My ex-husband died. Well, I've had that P.O. box since I was 15. He died 7 years ago, so I kept it. My daughter gets her dad's paperwork from the town of Longboat Key, you know, for his, whatever it is, his retirement. So the only time I've ever used that P.O. box is on my last two campaigns. No kill, I guess.
Well, that P.O., excuse me, Carol, are you saying that in the last two campaigns that P.O. box has been used actively? Does that mean a receipt of monies, or how does that work?
No, I didn't want to have people have my home addresses to send donations. So in my campaign literature, I use my P.O. box. It's my personal one.
Well, let me ask Barbara a question. Do you have some indication there was any commingling of funds?
And commingling, no way. If anybody, there are envelopes that come in that say to Carol Whitmore or to my dead ex-husband or to, I think it says on their envelope, support no kill or whatever. The lady at the mailbox knows that they have permission to have the envelope put in there. I have never opened an email, I mean a letter, and they've never opened one of mine.
So
they
say
that you, the goodness of your heart, let an organization use it.
Okay.
That's just...
Let me just ask Barbara this. Barbara, do you have any evidence such as that? Or you just have the fact that the mail is received at both post office ones?
And what is the problem with that?
Well, it's a charity, and it should be separate. It should be a separate post office box because it's a charity. It shouldn't be going to her.
I don't think that's statute, though, but we'll... Barbara, there's other issues I really would like to get to. Any last words?
No.
All right, thank you.
They have a key, and I have a key, so I don't go give them any checks or envelopes, and they don't give me any. We have our own separate keys.
That's my main question. If, other than the PO box, if anybody has any evidence that there's something else happening there.
Well, who is they, when you said they, Carol?
The Animal Network,
I guess the president, I think she's the president. She works in Anna Maria, the city of Anna Maria, and she cuts hair. And that's why I told her, well, heck, I have a P.O. box in Holmes Beach. You can use it because she drives to the island every day.
And I want to say, when I was looking this up last night trying to get information on it, now the Animal Network's website has an Ellington address for mail.
Oh.
So.
Yeah.
Let's go to a different issue than this. One of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about was the idea of what we're going to do with the waste from Piney Point and the deep well injections. And for the audience, first tell us the status of Piney Point, what the waste is, and what the county is thinking about doing.
We as county commissioners said we were not going to take the risk of digging the deep well injection. The farming community just came up and they stood up tall and they said, we don't want to risk the water of any seepage, you know, to go into, I mean, 54% of Manatee County is agriculture. So we did not want to jeopardize anything with our farming community. The Jones Potatoes, he just bought 800 acres just behind that. So as it sets now, the policy of the board is we are, you know, we didn't cause this problem. The state needs to handle this. And when they do handle it, we need to make it stricter than even what their laws are now. Because if anything bad's going to happen, it's going to happen at Piney Point. I was a nurse at Manatee Hospital the day they had the plume, and I saw former Commissioner Eddie Chance coming through the ER in respiratory distress. I mean, I've known about this for a long time, and this is not a good situation, and there's no reason why we should put this on the backs of Manatee County.
But what is the other options, just to leave it sit there? Or, I mean, because that's a known risk factor. We don't know the risk factor of the deep injection wells.
You're absolutely right. And the state says that the compounds in the water has improved, and mainly it's because it's been sitting for years and, you know, the rain and the evaporation, et cetera. That's what they reported to us. The state could build a deep well injection. We have one in Manatee County. A lot of people don't even realize that one in Cortez. We've had it for many, many years, since the 80s. But, again, I am not, and I am never going to support building a deep well injection near that area at all, because if it's something bad's going to happen, it's going to happen there, and I'm not going to risk our agriculture community.
So let me get clarification here. You're against the deep well injection of the waste at Piney Point?
Yes, I'm not going to vote it. I'm not going to take the risk of Manatee County to dig that, because I'm not going to take the life.
And what is the status of that proposal right now? Has it been, is it just pending a vote or what?
No, they withdrew it at the point, because we told, when the state came up before us, we told them we were not going to deal with this. This is...
we being the entire commission?
We county.
Yeah, okay.
Why would we? I mean, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen there. And I just don't want to take the risk. And our farming community, our agriculture, is way too important to jeopardize.
All right. Now, we're down to our last couple minutes here, Carol. And you've made time here. I see. I guess we have a new show coming up after us. Is that correct, by the host standing out in the aisle there? All right. So we have a couple minutes here, then, I guess, more than we thought. What, Augie, you go.
Well, my interests are a little bit different, and I brought it up in all of my discussions with the commissioners and the boards and so forth. The at-large voting in two of the districts is, to me, a compromising element. It puts the candidates in the pocket of big money, and it seems to me that the commissioner, in the case of the county commission, in the case of the school board, there should be an effort in Manatee County to make all of the districts district voting single member. And why should two of the commissioners be continually financially at the mercy of big money? And big money does win those elections. Nothing else does. And many times, if you have a district, the person in the district loses to somebody else who's opposing him, who doesn't have the big money, but wins in the entire county. And that happens in Sarasota. Sarasota has five districts for their county commission and five for their school board. Here you have five out of seven single member. Why not make it consistent? So what's your opinion about that?
Well, from somebody that's had to bust, you know what, and go all over the county, and
but that would be
my opponent
in the single
has
member.
Also, it's not easy when you're running at large. And you are right; you need money, because you have to touch every person in the 710
so
square miles.
That being said,
I totally would. I don't know; it's never been discussed, like I told you last time. But I kind of like the way that Sarasota County has it.
You do, and you realize the developers own the county, and it's a single party system. That's what we have. We have that in the state, and we have that in Sarasota County. So is that what you want as a result for Manatee?
Well, you know, I know, you know, that's just like a sexy word that everybody always says, that everybody, the developers are in your pocket.
No, you're in their pocket. That's the reality.
And I'm not, I know that's what people think. I couldn't even tell you who's, after I wrote the thank you note, I couldn't even tell you so far who's contributed to me. I remember a few names. But I had to look last night because, you know, I had to make sure.
But, Carol, I just asked you a question. Which would you rather do? And you want everybody to run at large. Is that what you're saying? So everyone
no, I'm saying it would be, to me, to have two people have to raise so much money, and then the others, like Ms. Sabatino, had to raise like $50,000, which is a lot for that district. There is some inequity there. It's never, ever been discussed, but I'm open to listen to anything.
In regards to listening to anything, again, we're right up against the clock here. One of the things that happened a lot, and I'm sure the next host is going to really take up some issues here, the idea that we've seen this with Commissioner Gallin, we've seen it with Commissioner McClash, the registering of write-in candidates that close out the primary election so that the majority of the voters in the county don't get a say in these elections, don't get an effective say. Do we have any way of changing that rule that a write-in candidate, because in many cases they seem to have questionable connections to one political faction or another. Do we have a way of removing that? Where does that level of legislation or law come in?
It goes at the state, and I agree. I don't even know who's running against Charles Smith, the write-in. And I just heard there's somebody, because I'm down here at Paul Caragiola, has a write-in. I don't think that's fair. They don't have to raise the money. They don't have to do all the hard work that the other candidates do. When I go up to Tallahassee this year, I may even bring it up at the county commission meeting before we go up there, because we'd like to set our platform early. I'm going to talk one-on-one to our legislators, because, you know, you got to see if they're willing to do it.
We have a caller that's been holding, and I'm trying to get him in under the wire, too, Carol.
Thank you.
Let's go to Ken, quickly, please.
Good morning, Ken.
Hey, good morning. About 20% of the children in Manatee County live in poverty. Manatee County is having a hard time.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
Manatee County is having a hard time funding its indigent care program. They tried to pass a tax on the taxpayers, and the taxpayers rejected it. The Manatee County Commission has rejected supporting the Medicare expansion program in the state of Florida. I'm wondering how you can account for this and where you stand on the issue. Thanks.
Well, it's Medicare, not Medicare, and I'm actually the only commissioner that actually brought it up, because glaringly it was not on our platform, and I heard from hundreds of people that they wanted us to go to the state and expand Medicaid because this indigent care tax didn't pass. I support what this caller is saying. I think, and I plan on going up and pushing our legislators. We do have it on our platform, but it doesn't say Medicaid. It said other programs like Medicaid.
Okay.
So at least it got on the platform. Before, it wasn't even on the platform.
Carol, 60 seconds. We have to leave, but what do you want to leave the audience with?
What are your last thoughts?
I want to thank everybody. I've really enjoyed meeting you guys. I am going to be your next county commissioner. I am going to win, and I am going to do what's best for Manatee County. No Kill will get on track. And I will make a commitment that I am going to make sure that we get our citizens jobs, and that's been my whole goal, is to make sure that we get our people back to work and we keep our taxes down. And that's been my goal since I've been in office, and I've always done it, and I'm a person of my word, and I don't lie.
Well, thank you, Carol.
Carol, thank you. We'll be looking forward to finding out what the results are in about 48 hours.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yep, and thank you, guys. I'll come back.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Now, I'm not quite sure what the status of the next show is. Maybe somebody can fill me in on this. We have the return of Rick and Friends.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
May I?
Go ahead.
Be careful what you ask for. Yes, indeed. Ricky's going to have a special show right now following this great program. I must say, watching it here in the studio, watching people bite their lips and prevent themselves from laughing out loud at that last guess, I'm sorry to say that was hard to take.
So I guess you'll pick up where we left off.
Well, yes, because there were so many inaccuracies there.
Mind-boggling. Well, stay tuned for that. Now, this is a one-shot show, or are we going ongoing, Rick?
I can't tell you. It's a secret.
All right. Okay, well, we want to thank all the candidates that have come in over the last 2 weeks, and we will make way, and I assume that everybody else in the studio except us will still be here?
No, I think...
All right, well, thanks to Terry Wonder. Thanks to Carol. Please get out and vote tomorrow if you haven't. And just listening to these interviews is why I wait till the last day to cast my vote.
It's something to die for.
Well, I don't know about that. We'll be back on Wednesday with Mitch Perry, the news and politics editor for Creative Loafing, doing a post-mortem on the election.
He'll be doing Last Call with us on Wednesday morning.